So, Claudie, what do you think is the greatest artwork of all time? Do you think it's the Mona Lisa?
I think the general consensus, if there is one, is Velázquez's Las Meninas, I guess, because there's so much going on in that work. It's a very enigmatic yet very palpable work when you go into. So it's the type of work that really invites the viewer, and it's something, because of its scale, it's something that you have to see in person,
in the flesh,
to really even come to any sort of understanding of what the painting is, or maybe you just get more lost in it when you see it.
Yeah, well, I love this idea of the mise en abîme. So it's like the mirror, like the artist's eternal mirror that's reflecting itself. And I think, his painting might be the smartest painting of all time, but just the best painting of all time. I don't know.
What would you say would be the best painting of all time?
Oh, I don't know. Now that I'm put on the spot, that's tough. Maybe? No, I don't have an answer to that.
You've caught
me at a moment where I really don't have an answer.
Because I have things that I like. Okay, so there's things I love. For example, I love, and I know sometimes they move in the side of Gaudí, but I love the Pre-Raphaelite type of art. And because it's just like a complete fusion of all the things I love, like poetry and myth and fairy tales and
women with very pointy features.
Yes. And it says great sense of romance.
Yeah.
But I would say that they're probably on the Gaudí spectrum.
Victoriana pitch.
I did a course at uni where we did the art of the Trecento period, which was sort of Gothic art transitioning into Renaissance. And I really enjoyed those type of works, like the murals of Joshua, which I know you said you didn't quite care for.
Well, you know, I mean, I just like my 3D.
Yeah. How about you?
What do I love? I am a sucker for Van Gogh. His paintings
cry.
Me too. It just evokes such a feeling. All the emotions, I just stand in front of his irises and I just start crying my eyes out. It's an incredible reaction, really.
No, you're totally right. Seeing that, you know, that white iris among the violet irises always makes you cry. And it makes me think, I don't know if you want to suddenly make yourself verklempt, or I think of him like slowly dying on a field. Alone.
No, don't do this to me.
I agree.
But besides that, I love one of the artists that have been featured in the exhibition we just saw.
Which one?
Titian. Titian is someone I care very much for.
Yep.
I love the softness of his art. And I really like looking at the beginning of his period and how he progresses, because his artworks become more and more soft, actually. Yes. Everything blends together more and more, and you get these these visions that are like a miasma, like a beautiful miasma.
Oh, it's beautiful.
And I love the color, and I love how fleshy his women are.
Yep.
They're fleshy, but they don't go full Rubens.
that's a point in distinction. Yeah.
No, I just think they're very, very beautiful, and I think they're an element, a tail end of Renaissance, early Baroque art that I don't think we see enough of in Australia, but there are many reasons for that.
Yeah.
and I think this exhibition, that's a good way to begin our discussion of the exhibition, I think. Why don't we see these artworks in Australia, and what do you think this exhibition is attempting to do by bringing them to a Sydney audience?
Well, the first question, I think, is pretty obvious. It's the distance, and also the extreme sort of wealth associated with these artworks. And I can't imagine what the insurance bill for this type of thing would have cost. But I think it's an excellent idea. I mean, I'm sure at this point of time in Scotland would be not many people venturing out to go and see these works. So why not bring them to, a place where, we're here on a Thursday morning and it was still quite a lot of people. Yeah. And so I can't imagine what it would have been like in the weekend. I think it's an excellent project. Mm. What did you think about the exhibition in itself, and in terms of its choices its curatorial choices and how it presents? Does it give you an idea of either like what great art is or the greats, or does it give you an idea of like Scottish art, which I think they were trying to create as well?
Yeah, well, I guess we should preface that question with some information about how the exhibition presents itself. Mm. So when you are walking in, you see this mural of Edinburgh, and then on the left there's information about the National Gallery of Scotland. Mm-hmm. So when you walk into this exhibition, it doesn't say these are the great artists and this is what we think, yeah, you know, the cultural hegemony is, yeah, of art.
Yeah.
It's saying this is Scotland and this is Scotland's National Gallery, yeah, which I think is quite interesting.
Yeah.
But then it begs the question, do we care? Are we invested emotionally in this idea of Scotland as a cultural landmark?
I would say no. I think if you were just going there to see like the greats, mm, you know, you kind of get, I think you would probably be that Scottish room that they had, this big octagonal red room, yep, with all these Scottish artworks.
You could press a certain number yeah, on the audio guide and would start playing like a Scottish piece of music,
yeah,
for you with bagpipes and all that kind of thing. So, so
you get the full experience. Did you press on the music?
Yeah, I listened to the music and I know when I had this moment of like, this is a really weird experience, mm, because I think on the one hand, Scotland is treated quite unfairly. Because it's like the lesser England. Like, yeah, do we read as much Scottish literature as we read English literature?
Yeah.
No, and we're not as exposed to Scottish culture and art as we are to English culture and art. But then again, like, this was only one room in the exhibition that was devoted to Scottish artists. Everybody else are like Renaissance painters or Baroque painters.
Yeah.
There was this one room filled with Rococo art.
Yeah.
Which we weren't so fond of. But,
no. lots of money in our taste.
Yes.
Well, actually, not that much money, but anyway.
Yeah. So I think it's interesting that this exhibition sets itself up as like this vision of Scotland on the one hand, but also it's trying to mediate that with these are the greats.
Yeah.
But then there wasn't that. The exhibition was a lot smaller than I thought it would be.
Yeah, it was a lot smaller.
I remember a few years back they had this Picasso exhibition. That was the Blockbuster Summer exhibition. Yeah. It was huge.
Mm.
It was about triple the size of this exhibition. And I saw it and I remember leaving thinking like, my goodness, I need the biggest cup of tea in the universe because I've spent like 2 hours in this thing and I'm depleted of all energy. We got through this in 45 minutes and we stood in front of nearly all the paintings.
And we listened to each and every one of the audio excerpts.
So if you weren't that interested, you could move through this thing in 20 minutes if you really wanted.
Yeah.
You know, so I think this exhibition has these broad aims of like presenting to us the greats.
Mm.
Knowing me, I'm going to say it's problematic that we have this representation of the greats, and who are we, who are they to define to us who the greatest artists are? Because there are a lot of, you know, people there who weren't, I mean, there were a lot of unmentioned artists because the Scottish National Gallery doesn't have them.
Yeah.
They had this one little etching by Da Vinci of the feet of dogs.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, is that... So we got Da Vinci in here, guys.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah.
It's all the greats, you know, even if it was like the most small and pointless and thing that you don't look at. Because let's be honest, who looks at the etchings, right, when you're in an exhibition?
Yeah.
So I think, going back to your question before about curatorial choices, I do not think it is clever when curators put all the etchings and gentle drawings together. Well, I think like when they do that, when they put all the etchings and sketches and stuff together, people don't look at them.
Yeah.
Because they're not as like bright and shiny as the paintings.
Yeah.
So you walk past them.
Yeah.
And I think that does them a disservice
because
there were a few that were very, very beautiful actually.
And give commentary on the art that surrounds them.
Yeah.
But if you just conglomerate together, if you did one conglomerate, then it just becomes seems like an afterthought.
Yes, indeed. Back to the curating, I guess. When you walk into the exhibition, so on the right-hand side, you see this Titian, then there's a Botticelli, and then there's a Veronese, And then there's a bunch of etchings on the left-hand side. And it's interesting that the Veronese is there because, you know, if you have a basic knowledge of art history or, like, you've been to an art gallery somewhere in Europe,
yeah.
like, you don't really know who Veronese is. That's that only comes from being, like, having an interest in Renaissance art and, yeah. like, you know, looking at that stuff. And I guess, yeah. like, I'm sort of interested in Veronese because I'm interested in yeah. Titian. But...
No, I admit, I didn't know.
Yeah, but it's interesting that, like, they put him up there as one of the greats. But yeah. but in our culture, he's not, like, the greatest.
No.
Yeah.
But I know maybe it is, like, maybe it is the curator's belief that Veronese should be considered in the world.
It's interesting that we have this fixation on this idea of greatness
yeah.
in artworks. And that's the main selling point of this. Like, they're saying, this is about Scotland. But it's not. We're not here to see Scotland.
Yeah.
We're here to see, like, a Botticelli that's being shown in Australia. Like, yeah. when does that happen, right?
And it's sort of interesting to see the impulse of having to see something live. And also the impulse of having to see because we've been told it's great.
Yeah.
That we go to see it, as opposed to, you know, if you were in a gallery in a normal context, you would just, most of the time you would happen upon
yes.
something. But this is a very conscious, you need to look at this.
Yes.
This is what you're going to look at.
But also the most interesting thing, not the most, an interesting thing, is that these are not the greatest artworks by the greats either. Yeah. There's this Vermeer, and it's Jesus talking to Mary.
Yeah, Martha and Mary, the two sisters.
Yes. And I'm like, this is the worst Vermeer ever.
I know. It was so undistinctive.
Yeah.
And you think of the sort of the preciseness and the intimacy and a very small, precise vision of the world that we know is Vermeer.
Yeah.
And then you see this massive, like, I wouldn't be able to tell you who yeah. I painted it yeah. if you had shown me.
But on the other hand, the fact that it is lesser known works, the greats, in quotation marks, did lead us to some very interesting finds and yeah. made us reconsider our view. For example, yeah. What did you think of the El Greco painting?
Well, I remember telling you as we approached it, I'm like, oh, I don't like El Greco. I'm like, in New York, there's this amazing museum called The Freak, which is just basically a house that's, like, full of all these amazing artworks that you can see in the context of a great stately home, as would have been the time of, like, Edith Wharton. And yeah, there's a huge amount of El Grecos there, and I really find it too macabre for me. I don't know.
It's kind of like, what's his name? Oh, I probably forgot his name. Caravaggio.
I kind of like Caravaggio.
Yeah, but I'm like, it's Caravaggio, but not as good.
Yeah. Oops. No, but I love this painting though, yeah. and I think it definitely did.
The name of it?
It was called
The Fable, the Fabula?
Yeah, or something, an allegory, yeah, I think. Yeah. And with this particular painting, if you do go to see it, definitely listen to the audio,
yeah.
The audio guide with it, because it had quite a lovely bit of art criticism. Mm. But it's, you see a boy lighting an ember, lighting an ember, and the ember, as opposed to red, is a bright white.
Mm.
And he's surrounded by two figures on each side, one an ape and one a laughing man. And the audio guide says that it perhaps an allegory about temptation, but it also could be an allegory about art, because the ape sort of calls to mind that sort of famous epigram of art is the ape that imitates life, or something like that. And so as much as you try to inflame the spirit of art, it can never really capture reality, or something like that.
It was really
quite lovely and very, very striking.
Mm.
And did you have a similar
Well, I thought it was very interesting, and it definitely made me reconsider,
like,
suddenly he's more interesting than he was before.
So it's not just a series of very white faces in a black background.
It's more to him now.
Yeah.
But that was placed next to a Velázquez painting.
Yes.
The old woman cooking the eggs. Which was very great. Yeah, really, really great and nice to look at. And there was this onion in the right, this red onion in the right
yeah.
bottom right hand corner, which I couldn't stop looking at, and I don't know why this onion just made me like.
What, do you want to like sort of do you want to go
looks
through?
It's so real, this
yeah,
this true. Onion. I don't know. Also, it's so beautiful and shiny, and I've never seen a red onion look so appealing.
And also, like, the idea that Velázquez would put so much care in presenting this onion. And it was also remarkable because that painting, I didn't realize, but it was likely painted when he was either 18 or 19.
Yeah, I was just like... What?
Yeah. Which is incredible. But, and it's also because I think if you think of the very sort of delicate painter of the Las Meninas.
Yeah.
It's quite a big divergence between the old woman cooking eggs and that painting. I mean, not just subject and sort of like a very sort of artistic sensibility at the latter half of his life, where it's very referential.
Yeah.
And then this one's much more about encompassing, like, real life.
Yeah.
As if you were taking a photograph.
But you know what it kind of reminded me of? It reminded me of Van Gogh's woman cooking potatoes, peasants cooking potatoes, peeling potatoes or something like that.
Yeah, I vaguely remember it.
That was probably
kind of... And the girl with the dead canary. Which did you
think that was so weird. In a great way.
So that had a really funny sort of, like, if you listen to the audio, they talk about Diderot, who was a great art critic at the time, and his interpretation of... So the painting is of this young girl. To me, she looks like 12 or 13.
12, yeah.
And she's mourning for this dead canary.
Yes.
That's just sitting outside on top of its cage, and it's very conscious, but it's very dead. And
it's an ex-canary.
I know. And it was a very affecting scene. I mean, it's a bit like, I mean, she's painted, like, it's a bit too perfect.
Yeah.
In that type of
painting.
The
slight glisten on her lips.
Yeah.
You know?
And the luminosity of her skin is
just
like.
Yeah, and the redness of her cheeks.
But I think the sort of that sort of like very melancholic scene, I think it's a really nice upending of this sort of like much more bucolic sort of portraits of young women that we see of this type of style. Anyway, Diderot, do you want to explain what Diderot's
interpretation was that the dead canary was but a allegory for the loss of her virginity. So I didn't see it that way because she looked a little too young to be,
I just, like, cavorting
around.
Like, perspective. Like, for me,
can't
I saw...
a girl with a dead canary.
Yeah.
Sometimes a dead canary is just a dead canary, you know?
Yeah. but that was quite amusing. And then right next to it, you have, like, a series of three very sort of stuffed with innuendo scenes by Boucher.
Yeah.
Of the Rococo and of these, like, love scenes with, like, I mean,
peasants.
The cat in the woman's lap
false
is...
False peasants.
Yeah.
making love to each other. I mean, making love in the old sense, not in the new sense.
There was a lot to love about this exhibition.
Yeah, there were definitely a lot of paintings that are definitely worthy of our attention, that are lovely to look at, but also a lot of paintings there that I wouldn't consider, like, you know, the great, like, the kind of...
Yes, something that shows the genius of the artist.
Yeah.
Something that, like, when you see it, you think, this is so wonderful and it's so of its time. And
yes. And then there was this weird curatorial choice where they had this watercolor by William Blake.
Yes.
Of God writing his laws on the tablets.
Yeah.
And it was stuffed in this corner where nobody's going to look at it. There was no kind of information given on the painting, really.
Yeah.
It was just like,
and
there was no audio guide. And William Blake is one of the
most original...
Yeah.
The most original individuals ever to exist in.
Like, he's so important. Like, in the Tate Britain in London, there's a whole room devoted to him.
Yeah.
Like, he's a big deal. And the fact
and,
that...
And, and of like if you're going to think of like art through like United Kingdom and their and the sort of history of great art, but there, like William Blake is a critical figure, not just for art, but like poetry and just even just the way people think.
So it's just very interesting that they just shoved that one to the corner, and yet you know these huge paintings of Scottish dukes that nobody cares about, like,
or at the end,
I don't give a swear word about about these like Scottish dukes and earls. Like, I mean, they're in the sense of art, like important in a historical sense, but like, I didn't come to this exhibition to see that, you know. So it's kind of weird.
Yeah. Maybe. Well, I'm just disappointed that there wasn't, you know. That there wasn't more, and I think William Blake's quite rare as well in Australia. I don't think I've seen in a regular sort of in the regular galleries here any William Blake's.
Yeah,
it's just very strange.
I mean, maybe it would have been different if they presented this collection as a timeline of the collection. So maybe the first room could have been the first things that it owned, and then progressed through there, or like as a way to understand Scotland and Scotland, the art world in Scotland. That could have been really
Of Lady Agnew. That was, I think I've seen that in many an Edith Wharton novel cover.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a really really beautiful
it
work.
Is very
and like that's to me emblematic of like something that's
very
of this exhibition.
Yeah,
it's a great
artwork. Yeah. Well, what about one of the things that they're selling this exhibition of? This my particular
your favorite.
My favorite.
Sir Henry Raeburn, the Reverend Robert Walker skating on Duddington Lock, circa 1795. And I think in the exhibition notes, if you like what. It's been called like the Mona Lisa of Scottish art, and you totally disagree.
I think it's so ugly. It upsets me to look at it. I just find it like it really bothers me. It kind of like reminds me of the Monty Python's Ministry of Funny Walks, and that's the second Monty Python reference that I've gotten onto this podcast, by the way. So, and I just find it so like. Dull and so serious, but in an
I don't see it as serious at all.
But he takes himself like the guy, the reverend himself, is just so serious, and his arms are folded. I just find it.
I think it's a sort of like in contrast to his serious expression is this sort of childlike elemental action, and so it's like the combination of that.
I just find it very. I don't like looking at it. Something about it just upsets me. I can't explain it.
It's his face. It's not decorous enough for you.
No, the shape. It's the shape of him and the...
It's the way his leg jaunts out.
I just can't. I have to avert my gaze. It bothers me so much.
Well, if you do go to this exhibition, it's completely unavoidable. You'll see it many times.
Yeah, they just put them everywhere.
On, mouse pads and...
you can get a mouse pad, but... So did you like this exhibition as a whole? Do you think it fulfilled its aims as what it was trying to achieve?
I like the convenience of the exhibition. I definitely think it's very small, especially for what you pay for. I hate to like
bring it down to that
level, but
that's
like,
fair.
And I loved that Botticelli, and there was like definitely moments of like incredible beauty.
Yeah,
and I really really enjoyed the audio guide.
Yeah,
can I express that enough? But yeah, I think that I think I definitely take some sort of issue with. The title of the exhibition, this idea of the greats, because I think we're slowly moving in terms of academic sort of discussions and moving away from this notion of the canon and like mythologized, like we talked last week about Shakespeare, like sort of mythologizing like not only geniuses but a very specific type of art.
Yes.
And saying, this is the greatest art ever made. Completely ignoring the vast number of works that are not, like, I mean, all the, there's not, you know, French artists or, or you know, like, so, or, and, you know, Asian artists and things like that. And, you know, and this is what, and so I think it's very problematic in this day and age.
Yeah.
To still have these type of exhibitions.
Yeah, there wasn't, you know, was there a single female artist in that entire exhibition?
Actually, yeah. I don't think so.
Yeah.
That's so
this
bizarre.
Is like, yeah, so not a, the only kind of image we have of people of a different race is Gangwon's
Tahitian women.
Yeah, exactly. That's problematic. Those paintings are problematic.
Problematic in and of
itself. That's a whole box that I'm just not going to open.
No, you're right. There's no women in it.
We're regurgitating this idea that, like, the greats of our culture is a specific group of people, but then, ironically enough, there are a lot of artists in this exhibition, which I definitely, if I was creating a hegemonic canon right here, right now, like, let's pick a nameless list. Boucher is definitely not going to be in my canon. So it's pretty weird for me. I totally agree with you, actually, and they should have just...
They should have called it something different.
They
could have just called it, you know, masterpieces from the National Galleries of Scotland. Do you really need the grades? I know it's like snappy.
It's a selling point.
And that's, you know, it's on tea towels and like mugs.
I don't want to buy a tea towel that says the grades on it. Like that's...
Yeah. So it's just...
Yeah.
I just think it's just very, very strange that, I mean, we're just asked to be completely not to give an analytical frame of mind and just to completely just
suck it in.
And so, yeah, the more I think about it, the more I think it's an incredibly...
Misnomer?
And it's sort of like a troubling idea that, you know, that we still want to, like, enforce this type of viewpoint.
Yes.
When we talk of culture, you mentioned cultural hegemony. That's precisely what it is.
And also when you go into the gift shop, Claudia and I had a laugh because they have this book section and they have this whole section devoted to Shakespeare. And we were like, what does he have to do with anything here? You just put, like, you say the great, so like the geniuses of our culture, and then you just got to bring Shakespeare into the, like, for the... It's weird.
It's very, very strange.
Yeah.
And I was like, I mean, there is only one, like, work that's like sort of referencing Shakespeare.
Yeah, there's a Scottish painting. I really like this painting, actually. It's The Midsummer Night's Dream.
Yeah.
It's one of those iconic fairy paintings.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's lovely, but like, I don't know why.
It doesn't warrant a whole shelf.
Why do we need a copy of Much Ado About Nothing? Like, it just doesn't. Like, it doesn't have to do with anything.
And if Shakespeare, why not the other? It's very bizarre.
Yeah.
And so it just goes to show how there's, like, underlying this very seemingly high art exhibition is this very commercialized impulse.
Totally. And I think also, like, when you look at it from the context of us being Australians, like, there's this cultural idea that we have that we are so culturally devoid.
Yeah.
That we will take anything from the rest of the world. We will take stuff from Scotland and elevate it to being, these are the greats. This is the highest art form.
Yeah, this is a once in a lifetime.
Like, when I was in Scotland, I didn't go to the Scottish National Gallery because, like, I thought, I'm going to be in Italy.
Yeah.
That's where the greats are.
Yeah.
So for me, it's just like, it's more emblematic and representative of our own view of our culture that we need to take things that are so... Like, some of these paintings, don't get me wrong, are very, very special and very, very important. Mm. But we will take anything and say that this is the best because we feel like we have so little.
Yeah, well, I was sitting outside the art gallery waiting for it to open. And it just occurred to me, like, I always laugh whenever I go to the art gallery in Southwest, which is, incidentally, one of my favourite galleries.
Yes, it's a lovely gallery.
It's a really beautiful gallery. In terms of Victorian artwork, it's actually really quite remarkable, the stuff that they do.
Yeah.
I really recommend
it. Raphaelite paintings.
Yeah. But it all inscribed in the walls of this building that we're sitting in are all these great names.
Yeah, so you and then have, like, these murals underneath them.
Of ancient myths. Mm. You have Rembrandt and Rubens and Vermeer and and Titian. Mm. And it always made me laugh because I'm like, there's no works of this. None of these great men's works are in the gallery. And now, I guess, finally they can say. So I just... And then it made me go to Wikipedia and look up exactly when this was made. Mm. This gallery was made. It was made in 1874, so pre-Federation.
Right.
Still very much in the midst of, like, this post-Victorian, imperialist. Mm. So I'm very much... So, like, the connections with Europe were still very, very strong in that period. And so it's really, really funny how we would see this viewpoint as extremely outdated. We have a very sort of like intense representation of this sort of like cultural imperialism in this exhibition.
Yeah.
So it's just very, we haven't really moved.
No, we haven't gone very far. Okay, so do we recommend seeing this exhibition?
Like, as with anything, that you can have an analytical mind and sort of piece out the political and cultural implications of everything.
Yes.
Or you can just enjoy
the Botticelli.
So, I definitely recommend it. And I was very excited to go and see it. And I still think that it was worthwhile to go.
Yes.
How about you?
Definitely. I really enjoyed looking at some of the artworks in there. And I think it's a good opportunity for people who haven't been able to look at these kinds of paintings before to see them. So, definitely recommend it.
Definitely.